Now we're holding on page 128 in Nedarim Ois Choftes. Continuing on the topic of sick people that we got into by way of Biku Cholim. So Gemara says, "V'omer Rav Alexandri, Omer Rav Chiya Ba'ava, Godol Nes Shenasa L'Chola, Yosemin Nes Shenasa L'Hanani Mishol V'Azalia." The Nes that happens when a sick person recovers is greater in a way than the Nes that was done to Hanani Mishol V'Azalia, where they were saved from Nebuchadnezzar's fiery furnace. Because there it was a human-made fire. It was an intense fire, so much the psukim describe over there. People were getting burnt by it, even outside the place. But still, it was a human fire. So in principle, anybody can put it out, as long as they have enough water or whatever. But the heat, the fire in a sick person when he has a fever, that's a fire that comes from Shemayim, at Mi Yuchal Chaboy, so who could possibly put it out? Marsha points out, we actually even find, for example, that we find the fire that came down from Shemayim with Eliyahu, that came down to consume the korban that he brought on the Mizbeach and Hara Carmel over there. It also licked up, it also devoured all the water they had there. The psukim describe over there how he had people pour barrels and barrels of water on the korban, and the whole surrounding area was drenched, and still the fire made short work of all of that. So we see, in other words, that it's not like you can use water to put out this kind of fire. What does that mean, therefore? So Marsha says it means, first of all, that you have to daven for tremendous rachmanus for a person who has a fever or a person in general who's sick. Realize that it's a tremendous nest that he's going to recover. Second of all, it also means that it's a kind of nest of which the Gemara elsewhere says, minakin loy mizchiyosav, means that when he does recover, it means that some of his chosim are going to have been used up in that. So a person should work to avoid getting sick in the first place, we've learned. Before the concept that the Gemara says, Hakol b'dei shemayim chutz mitzinim pachem, that a person has a responsibility to take proper care as far as heat and cold to not allow himself to get sick from those if he can help it. So here we're saying if he does get sick and then the Eibishter has to, so to speak, expend effort to recover, to help him recover, then it means that some of his chutzim have been taken away. Ian Yaakov also points out, since we had said before that Rabbi Alexandri had also said it in the name of Rav Chiya Ba'aba, which is why the Gemara is bringing this over here also, because it's also from him, that when a person recovers from an illness, it means he's been forgiven for all his avodas. So that's the kind of person who would be zeicha to a great nest like this, which in a way is even greater than the nest with Hanani Mishael Bazaria. The Maharal makes a point that what it is the reason for that. Why is it a bigger nest? Is because, in fact, the healing of a sick person comes from a higher level of course than does even the nest of Hanani Mishael V'Azaria. I guess we could explain it in the sense that the Rebbe often talks about the idea, for example, that nisim that are in clothes in teva are in a way even greater than the nisim that are obviously the ma'ilam and a teva, that Hanani Mishael V'Azaria should survive a fiery furnace is obviously the ma'ilam and a teva, whereas the nest that a person recovers from a fever or other illness is melubash in teva. And then in that sense, therefore, it comes from a higher level of course. So the Gemara continues. Others say that Rabbi Shurban Levi said this next one. When it comes to a person's at the time, the designated time for a person's end, when it's time for a person to pass away, anything can dominate him. Meaning, in other words, for example, like this, we have that normally animals are afraid of people. Marachim b'chitz chamiyah, the pasuk says that the fear of people is normally on animals, but here, when it's time for him to go, then he loses that, and then anything, as we're going to see in the Gemara over here, even the mefardish says over here, even tiny little creatures like flies or mosquitoes or whatever can be the instrument that Hashem makes to that they dominate over him and they end up killing him. Kenemar, as we find the pasuk that Kayan says, "V'hoyachol moitzi yahargeni." He's nervous. He says, "After Hashem, you've sent me into Golos, and you're punishing me for killing Hevel. So now, anybody who finds me will kill me." So what do you mean, anybody? Means even the little creatures, even the tiny little creatures that normally would be afraid of people. Kayan has reason to be afraid that they're not going to be afraid of him anymore. Kol moitzi means habishluchem namakim. In fact, by the way, Maharshal points out, we do see that in the end he was killed in a very unexpected way by his descendant, Lemech, as we know the famous story. So he really was killed in a way completely out of left field that nobody could have predicted. This is an example of a kol moshlim boy. You would bederech hateva, his descendant Lemech should have enough derech eretz for him to be careful where he was shooting, but in the end, since the Ebishter wanted it, then that's how it worked out. Rava, or Rav Omamehacha, he was a different pasuk that expresses this point. L'mishpatecha omdu hayoim, regarding your judgments, Hashem, everything is standing every day. Kia kol abadecha, because all of them are your servants. Meaning, in other words, that once l'mishpatecha omdu, once a person has been judged and decided and based in Shamayla hayoim today, that it's time for him to die, then hakol abadecha, then every creature in the world is Hashem's servant to make it happen. You have other places where the Gemara discusses the point that when is a person judged exactly? You have Adam, that a person is judged every year Rosh Hashanah, that a person Adam Nidin Mechol Yoim, Adam Nidin Mechol Shah, and you have the various explanations of Mephoshim that we've learned about when we learned this in Rosh Hashanah and in other places about what that means exactly, what kind of judgments are done at different times. You have what the Rebbe Rashab talks about at some length in Kundra Samayin, that it's all of the above. You have on Rosh Hashanah, there's what kind of Ashpa is going to come down to him in a general way from the Olam HaSoyonim, and then every day and every hour, it's apportioned how exactly it should come down in our Gashmi Yisika world. So here we're saying, when it comes Hayoyim, when it comes the day that Hashem has decided, when it's actually going to happen, then he's going to go, then HaKol Avodecha. So examples of that. They one time, for example, told Rabba Bar Shila, why do we have two psukim, by the way, and why if first Rabbi Alexandri or Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi is bringing a posik from Chumash, then why does Rava or Rab find it necessary to bring a posik from Tilim? So Ben Yoyada explains, because the first posik just means that, yes, yeah, they deliberately encounter him, but does that mean that it could just happen without even any intention on their part? So for that you need the second pasuk to say that yes, even then the Eibishter can make it happen in his way. So the Gemara says, Amr le Rabba Bar Shila, Shachiv Hahu Gavra Goiva, a certain tall person passed away. What happened? Rochiv Gidruna Zutra. He was riding on a very low, a very small mule, Motatitura. Then he came to a bridge, istatet, and at that point the animal was istatet. Now the Ran understands that means that it went crazy. He relates it to a word in Aramaic that means to go crazy. A number of the other Mephoshim over here on the Gemara explain, rather Tosfos and the Rosh explain, that it actually comes from a word in Aramaic that means frightened. There's a word siyuta in Aramaic, which the Gemara elsewhere uses to mean a nightmare, so it means that it got frightened. So whatever, it went crazy or it got frightened, as the case may be. Shadye b'maya v'kashochiv. So the animal threw the person off into the water, and he died, he drowned. Kora anafshe, so Rabba Bar Shila applied, you can say that here was an example of what we just said, that here you have hakol abadecha, you would expect, is it a natural thing that such a thing should happen, that all of a sudden, punct at that time, the animal goes crazy or frightened and throws him off, especially also, then Yoyada points out also the fact that he was tall and the animal was short. But derech hateva, even if the animal starts going wild or crazy or whatever, it should be easy enough for him to get off the animal before it has a chance to throw him off. And here, since the Eibishter had decided it's time for him to go, so therefore it all worked out that way. So when it comes to your judgments that stand today, when Hashem decided today that this person is going to die, kiyakol avodecha, then everybody owe you avodim. Page 128 in the Darim. Everybody is your Eved, meaning even this mule all of a sudden out of the blue goes crazy or gets frightened or whatever and then causes him to die. The expression kora anafshe, by the way, means that he set on himself. So it can mean that, I mean, it's not Rabbi Bar Shila himself, it's not the person in the story. So we would have to say that it means that he said, I can take this as a lesson for myself to realize how far the Eibishter's Hashgacha Pratis goes, even in such unexpected ways. Another example, Shmuel Chazilahu Akriva. Shmuel saw a certain scorpion, the Yosef al Akrukta, that was riding on the back of a frog, the Ovra Nahara, and it was crossing the river. The scorpion itself can't get across the river, so it hitched a ride kind of on the back of the frog in order to cross the river, and Tarka Gavro missed. And then when it got to the other side, the scorpion stung somebody over there, and he died. So again, so Shmuel said, here you have the same pasuk. Here you have the Ebishter that decided this person needs to die from a sting of a scorpion. There's no scorpion over there. So, and the Derech HaTeva, how would it get there? So the Ebishter arranges that it'll hitch a ride on the frog, if that's what it takes, in order for it to happen. It's interesting, by the way, you know, in English you have a popular expression, the scorpion and the frog, which actually apparently comes from some Russian folk tale or whatever, along the lines of the scorpion says to the frog, I want to hitch a ride on your back, and the frog says, yeah, but you're going to sting me. The scorpion says, listen, if I sting you, we're both going to drown, so of course I won't. Then halfway across the river, the scorpion does sting the frog, and as they're both drowning, the frog says, well, why'd you do that? And the scorpion says, listen, you know, that's my nature. What do you want from me? So they use that as the kind of thing. Like you have, a Russia Marusha, you know, you're not going to get him to act properly. You know, now when you have all the news out of Eretz Yisrael of what Hamas did, Yimach Shemam, and, you know, it gives us more of an example of this kind of thing. Anyway, but here the Gemara is taking this kind of thing and using it in a completely different way to show how the Eibishter makes them work together and then to make peace and temporarily for the scorpion to not exercise his nature and sting the frog in order that it should, in order that it should be brought to where it needs to go. Okay. Getting back to matters of Bikur Cholim, the Gemara says, Amar Shmuel, Ein Mevakrin Ela L'Mishal Shachalatzatu Chama. When it comes to Jum Bikur Cholim, we visit in person only somebody that Chalatzatu Chama. Now, sometimes in the Gemara, chalatzatu chama means that a person's fever has broken, because the word chalatz in Lashon Kodesh can mean two things. It can mean to be wearing or to be adorned with, like you have chalutz in tavru, like they're adorned with their weapons to go to war, and it can also mean Lashon taking off, like chalitza. So in a number of places in Shas, the word chalatzatu chama is used to mean when he's divested himself of the fever. In other words, when the fever is broken and going away. But here the Ran explains it means the other way around. It means that, it means the first kind of chalatz that he's now armed with it, meaning that he's taka suffering right now from a fever. So Shmuel is saying only that kind of person should you visit. In person. So the Gemara asks, "Pokimai, as opposed to what? What other kinds of illnesses is Shmuel saying that it's not good to visit the person to visit the sick person yourself?" The answer is Lapuki Haditanya. He wants to exclude this that it says in a Braisa, Rav Yosi ben Parta Oma Mishum Rav Eliezer. We do not visit people who are sick with a stomach ailment, as the Gemara is going to explain why. Or people who have an eye, or people who have an eye disease, an eye infection. Or people who have a headache. All of those, Rabbi Yossi ben Parta wants you to know, it's not good to visit them. So now, one way of understanding, in other words, the Ran understands then that Shmuel agrees with this Braisa, Shmuel doesn't mean that the only one you should visit is somebody who's suffering from a fever. He just means, don't visit any of those three in person, for reasons that the Gemara is going to explain, but if you have anybody outside of those three, then Gesunta Heit, go visit him in person. On the other hand, the Ritz says that maybe not. Maybe Shmuel is going beyond this Braisa and saying not only you shouldn't visit people who are suffering from one of these three things that are mentioned in the Braisa, but even anything else other than a fever, because with other kinds of situations, then also the visit is not going to be so good for them. Now, obviously, it doesn't mean you ignore the person altogether. It means you don't visit him in person. It means, like we learned before, you ask the family how he's doing. You see if there's anything you can do, but you don't visit him in person because, as the Gemara is going to say, the visit itself, the personal visit and the talking with him is not going to be so good for them. So, why is that? I understand why when they, if they have a stomachache, mishum kisufa, the reason is because they're embarrassed. They're constantly having to go to the bathroom. So therefore, every time they're going to have to excuse themselves, and it's going to be embarrassing to them. El choyle ayinu mechushi arosh my timer. But why shouldn't you visit somebody who has an eyeache or who has a headache, my timer? Why not? And the reason is mishum de Rav Yehuda, based on what Rav Yehuda says. The Amr Rav Yehuda, dibura koshi la'ena, speaking is bad for a person who has an eye disease. And also the Mefarish adds also that the same thing applies to headaches. They both have the same basic kind of thing, so therefore what applies to one applies to the other. So in other words, if you visit with him, you're going to get into a conversation, and it's not so comfortable for him. Umali le'ishasa, on the other hand, talking, conversation, is good for people who have a fever. So there, if the person has a fever, by all means, visit him and have a conversation with him, and that'll make him feel better. There was a really nice vort on this from the Bnei Yisoschar that says on a deeper level when we're saying over here that you don't visit people who have stomach aches or headaches. You have the expression in Shir Hashirim where we say to the Eibishter, Ki cholas ava oni, that was sick with love for you, Hashem. And the Medrash says on it something like, it means we don't have a stomach ache, we don't have a headache, we don't have a gashmi stick of ache, we have an ache of love for you. So the Bnei Yisoschar explains a stomach ache would represent that we're saying that we want closeness to the Eibishter because Parshat, we have troubles with our stomachs, we're hungry and gullus, we're not making it financially. And a headache would represent that we want the Eibishter's closeness to help us against the goyim who are forcing us to bow our heads to them and be subservient to them. So we're saying nothing of the above. We only, the reason why we want you to visit us, and then to be close to us, is only because we want you. Mevilno dichalein. There's also a vort the Chidah says on this, by the way, when we say Dibura Kosh La'ena, it has also another musudic meaning. It means that when a person speaks the wrong kind of speaking, it causes bad things for their eyes, and it has a bad effect on what they see and where they wind up after 120. He says Umali Le'ishasa, that's what Umali Le'ishasa, it's good for the fire, isn't it? It's more likely to make him wind up in the fire of Gehenna. The Gemara continues, Omar Rava, Chai Eshosa, when you have this kind of heat of a fever, and we just said before, this is a fire min Hashemayim, and it's a tremendous nest that a person even recovers from it, but Rava says, that actually, Ilav de Pravanka de Malacha de Misusahi, really, if it weren't for the fact that it's the Shliach of the Malach HaMavis, that people sometimes die from such things, Mali, it would actually be a good thing, Kechizra Ledikla, like the prickly thorns that grow around a palm tree. Yeah, often by the base of a palm tree, you have a prickly prickly bushes that grow there, which help that people can't so easily climb up the palm tree and take the fruit. So in a way, a fever is a good thing. It helps kill off bad bacteria and things like that in the body. So the problem is sometimes the fever itself. And actually, modern medicine knows this, Kaka, that sometimes, you know, your person usually, you know, they have a fever, they take Tylenol right away. The fever is actually the body's natural defense mechanism to kill off the bacteria. They're more sensitive to heat than the body itself is. But then, yeah, you have the fever is too high, then it can damage the body itself, which is what Rava is saying over here. On the one hand, it can be very deadly. On the other hand, though, a moderate fever is actually a very good thing to help clean up toxins from the body. So he says, Chad l'tlos in yoymen, if a person were to have a fever once every 30 days, ki tiri yoka l'gufa, it would be as effective and as healthful for the body as tiri yoka. Tuyaka is a concoction. It has in English also the word is used theriac. It means it's basically a concoction that they would use in those times against various kinds of venoms and poisons and things. It had a bunch of different ingredients in it. So the point is, it's good for you if you have something. If you ate something poisonous. You were bitten or stung by something venomous. Then you take tuyaka and it helps you recover. So the same way, Robert. Saying a fever has the same effect on the body of getting rid of harmful things. On the other hand, Rav Nachman Yitzchok on Aloihi v'loi Tiryaka. Rav Nachman Yitzchok says, I don't want it and I don't want its Tiryaka. Sure, maybe you're saying it's good for you, but you know what? We're still better off without it because the risks of it are too great. More on this topic of sick people and what's good for them. Amar Rava, Rabba Bar Yonason, Amar Rabbi Chiel, our son, Yofa L'choyla L'Rfuasai. Our son, which we're going to define in a second, is a very good thing to give to a sick person that'll help him recover. My arison. So what is arison? Amr Rav Yochanan and Rav Yonason. Chush l'desari atikosa. It's peeled old barley. So when the barley or any kind of grain has been aged a while, it's easier to peel off the outer layers of it. So you do that. And so that's why it's old ones. And you peel them. And then you sift them, the reish nafya, and it's what you find at the top of the sieve. So the Ran understands reish nafya to mean the beginning of the sifting. So what you get, what sticks there at the beginning, is the best part of it, and that's the kind to make a cereal or a porridge of to feed the sick person. Different explanation of reish nafya means that it. So one explanation of reish nafya means what you get when you start sifting it. The other explanation is what sticks to the top of the sieve. Elsewhere also Rashi explains that chushla is not only where the barley is peeled, but also where it's then cracked into a few large pieces out of each grain. So it becomes something sort of like fireful or something, and you make that, and it's good for a sick person. Abaya says if you want it to be good for the sick person, you have to boil it the way that you would boil beef. You would boil beef for a long time to make it tender and edible. The same way this arison over here, if you want it to be good for the sick person, you've got to boil it for a long time so it becomes really soft. Rabbi Yosef says that there's a different possibility of what arison is, smidi desari atikosa dereish nafya. Not the actual grains themselves that are peeled and maybe cracked, but rather fine flour. Smidi is fine flour, like solus in Lashon Kodesh. So the fine flour from old barley grains, dereish nafya, again from the top or the beginning of the sifting. So according to him, it's not just that you have the whole kernel of grain, or maybe that you break it, or maybe that you crack it into a few large pieces, but rather that you actually grind it into flour and then sift it. And again, Amar Abayo, Boyin Beshula, Kibisur de Torah, and here also Abayo says you would have to cook it for a long time, and like beef. So the Gemara continues, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, bor dum or bor dus, there are different geuses over here, ein mevakrin oisai, we don't visit in person a person who's suffering from bor dum or bor dus. The Gemara is going to explain in a minute that it means it's a disease where he's bleeding heavily from his backside. So one possibility is the name of it itself is Burdus, and Oroch HaSholem, he traces it to a Greek word that means a fountain, because like he's bleeding like a fountain. The other possibility is that means Burdum, that it means like a well of blood. He's a well full of blood that's constantly leaking out. So Ein Mevakruno, he said we don't visit such a person in person. The Ein Mazkirin Shmoi. And we don't mention Shmoy. Now, what do we mean by Shmoy? The Ran explains it means we don't say this person, Pliny, is suffering from Burdum. Because it's first of all, it's not Loshen Nakia to even mention the name Burdum. And second, because it's a rather disgusting disease, as we're going to go on to say. And also because the person is going to get embarrassed that people are talking about him, that he's suffering from this. There are different explanations among the Mephoshim, whether Ein Maskirin Shmoy means you shouldn't mention the name of the disease, or whether it means you shouldn't mention the name of the person. This is maybe a mocker for the fact, the same way we talk about, for example, Yenem Machla, and there are various other things. The Gemara sometimes uses Dover Acher instead of Tsaras, so this is one source for that kind of thing. Ben Yehoyada makes the point that there's different malochim for different diseases, so like mentioning the very name of the disease, Burdum, like it calls on that malach and gives him a certain koyach. So my timer, why shouldn't you visit him and why shouldn't you mention? Because he's like a well, it's like a wellspring that's constantly flowing forth blood. So the Mephodesh over here printed under Rashi's name gives a couple of possibilities what it is. One is that it means it's some kind of intestinal or bleeding or bleeding from his colon or whatever, where like he's constantly is constantly bleeding forth from his acharayim. In English, there's a disease called dysentery, which may be that, where a person taka has very bloody diarrhea. The other possibility, the Mefarish says, it may be some kind of boil or something over there, which may be meaning with like a heavily bleeding hemorrhoid or something like that. Whatever the case, it's a very embarrassing thing, and he's constantly having to go into the bathroom, and the Mefarish also points out it's also contagious, so that's another reason why not to visit him in person. Again, that doesn't mean you ignore him, but it means that you don't go visit him in person, you go and find out from afar how he's doing and what he needs. Again, because welling forth blood, therefore burdum, it's like a well or a pit full of blood. All right, a large part of our Masechta, several prokem of it, deal with definitions. We had a little bit of it earlier. We had the example, for example, a person makes a neder not to have hana from people who have a mila, then who does that include? We said it includes Jews, but not goyim, even if they're physically circumcised, and vice versa. That brought us into, we had a couple of weeks back, a whole sugya about bris mila. So there's a lot of other things like that. A person makes a neder, such and such category will be also to me. We have to know what's included in that category. So the Mishnah at the beginning of our parak starts talking about, for example, on nodim and amavushal, a person were to make a neder not to eat anything cooked. So then the Mishnah says it only means cooked. It means, for example, it'd be mutter to eat things that are roasted or stewed or other things like that. Anyway, then the Mishnah goes on to say, Tavshil she'eini toyim, if he makes a neder that I won't taste from any Tavshil, so Tavshil has a broader meaning than just Mevushal. Mevushal would mean specifically cooked as opposed to other ways of preparing food with meat. Tavshil, as the Gemara is going to explain, means things that are normally eaten together with bread. So different kinds of cooked dishes that are normally eaten with bread. So therefore he would be also to eat a maisik deira, which is any kind of mizonis dish, like the porridge that we were talking about, the arson or other things that we were talking about before, when it's soft, meaning in other words when it has gravy or something in it, but he would be allowed to eat a thick concoction like that, because that's not something normally eaten with bread. So the Gemara asks, well, Tavshil Nader. Wait a minute, though. He only made a neder not to eat Tavshil. And doesn't Tavshil usually mean specifically things that are, for example, meat dishes or things like that? So the answer is, Amar Abaye, Hai Tana, Kol Midin, Mis'achol Be'rifta, Tavshil Korilei. In the Tana of our Mishnah, lived in a place where the definition of Tavshil was anything that's eaten together with bread. So not only meat or vegetable or things like that, but anything that would be normally eaten with bread, and like we said, had some kind of gravy or liquid in it, that therefore would make a nice accompaniment, a lifton, for the bread. So it's one of those things where in general we have the rule when it comes to Nedarim, the Nedarim holochach haloshim ne'adam, you go according to the common terminology that people use. So in the place where this Tana lived, that was the definition of Tavshil, and therefore that's how he defines it. V'ha Tanya, and indeed thus we learn in a Braisa, that the definition of Tavshil for this purpose is that, because a Braisa says, Hanodim in a Tavshil, when a person makes a neder not to eat a Tavshil, also b'chol mine Tavshil, then he's also within any kind of cooked dish. So in other words, again, it doesn't just mean meat dishes or things like that. But also b'tzoli, he would also be also to eat anything roasted, unlike when he said mina mevushal, which doesn't include roasted. Mina Tavshil is going to include things that are roasted. Over Sholuk, as well as Sholuk, the Ran discusses over here, what is Sholuk? It's not printed over here in the Inyakar, but in the Gemara, the Ran discusses whether sholok over here, sometimes in the Gemara, sholok means stewed, like overcooked, like cooked until it's really soft and falling apart. But he says here, it may not necessarily mean that, it means where it's undercooked, it's not cooked as much as it usually would. Anyway, so he'd be also in that as well, over mevushal, and things that are cooked the regular amount. But also with hitrius rakis, in addition, he'd also be also to eat soft pumpkins or squashes, Shacholim Oichlim Behen Piton, because sick people eat them together with their bread. So we see, therefore, the Patana of this Braisa is making the point that anything that's eaten with bread is in the definite, is in the category of Tavshil. So therefore, he's saying even, for example, a squash or a pumpkin, you don't cook it in a pot. You put it in the oven and you put it in the oven and you bake it, basically. But nevertheless, it's the kind of thing that people eat with bread, and therefore it's included in the category of Tavshil. All right, so we see from this, in other words, that it's a good thing for a sick person to eat hitrius, to eat squashes. Well, the question is, Amy, is that so? Well, Rabbi Yumiya Cholosh, one time Rabbi Yumiya was not feeling well. Ola Gabea Hu Asil Asua, a doctor came to visit and cure, a doctor came to cure him. Chozakora Demachas Bebese, he saw there was a squash or pumpkin or whatever, it's a bunch of related vegetables, squashes, pumpkins, gourds, or we can probably use the words interchangeably for our purposes. Whatever, he saw that kind of vegetable in Rabbi Yumiya's house. Shavke v'nafak. He left him alone and then left. Omar, he says, Malach Moisa Isla the Dame Bebesia. This guy, Rabbi Yumiya, has a Malach Amoves in his house. Why should I come in and cure him? He needs to have a better diet. So we see, in other words, that squashes are not good for sick people. And the answer is like Kasha Hobarakichi Hobashuni. There's no contradiction. One's talking about soft ones, the young ones, whatever, and the other's talking about hard ones. This doctor saw over there a hard one, so he realizes that Rabbi Yumiya is not eating properly, but as opposed to the Braisa, was talking about a soft young one. Rav Abba Ula gives a different answer. Hoba kora gufa yva hoba gave dekora. Depends whether you're talking about the pumpkin as a whole, or whether you're talking about the insides of it. The insides of it are good for a sick person. The outside, the shell, the outer layers of it, the meat of it are not good for the sick person. And we see that there can be a difference sometimes between the inside and the outside of a vegetable. The Amr of Yehuda, as we find, for example, that Rabbi Yehuda points out, luliva de kore, exactly that, the soft part of a kore, of a squash, the silka, if you mix it together with silka, which is beets or some similar vegetable to that, is good for a sick person. Luliva de kitna, and similarly, if you take the inside, the soft parts of flax seed, the kutcha, and you mix it with kutach, which is a dip that they had in those days in Babel, it was basically a form of sour cream. It was a sour milk, salt, and breadcrumbs. So it was similar to sour cream or feta cheese or something like that. They used to use it in Babel as a dip for their food. We find it mentioned in various places in Shas. So that kind of thing also is good for a sick person. You take the insides of flax seeds, or the Rosh gives a slightly different definition. You take the flax seeds and soak them in water until they become soft, and you mix it with kutah, then it's good for a sick person. The dovers that also the oimrei b'fnei amaoretz. However, you should not say this matter over in front of an amaoretz. Now, why not? What's wrong with saying it for an amaoretz? The Ram says the reason is because the amaoretz are going to say, hey, well, if the insides of flax seeds are good for you, then let's take as many flax seeds as possible and use it for that, for cures. And the problem is, then you're not going to have a flax crop. They're going to go and use up all the flax seeds for that, or they're even going to take from other people's flax plants or whatever. A number of the other Mephoshim over here have a variety of different reasons why you shouldn't. The Mephoshim says the point over here, that in general, we don't necessarily want to do things for Amei Oretz that are going to help them and prolong their lives. In other places, the Gemara has very negative things to say about Amei Oretz. There are different degrees of Amei Oretz, but according to him, apparently we're talking about the kind that we don't really want to help with these kinds of ways. And Tosfos and the Rosh point out that another reason behind it is because if we tell them such a thing, they're going to, like, make fun of us. That's the kind of thing that Yutam and Chacham are dealing with, things like that about cures and things like that that every Alta Baba knows. So therefore, so don't tell it to them, so they don't come to look down on some of the Chachamim and the Torah. Okay. So all that is one answer, therefore. So far we have two answers. Again, on the one hand, we're saying that it's good for a sick person to eat squash. On the other hand, we're saying the doctor was unhappy with Rabbi Yumiya eating it. So we said either we're talking about soft ones versus hard ones, the young versus mature, that is, or we're talking about the outside parts of it versus the inside. So now, Rava gives a different explanation. Man cholin rabbanon. When we talk about, when we said before about the hitrius rakus, the soft young squashes, we said that cholin, that sick people eat their bread with it. We don't mean cholim as an actually sick people. We mean rabbanon. We mean the talmid chachamim. They're working. They're learning Torah constantly, and they don't have hanah from the world, so therefore they easily become sick. So they need a good balanced diet, and for them we're saying they eat hitrius rakus together with their bread. On the other hand, real sick people, then we have from the story of Rabbi Yirmiyah, we see should not be eating them. And the Gemara points out, Rava l'tamei. Rava is going according to his svara that he calls the Talmid Chachamim sick people. The Amar Rava k'man matzlinin al k'tziri v'al miri. Now we were talking about just before. You have the Gemara in Rosh Hashanah talks about the question: when is a person judged? Is he judged on Rosh Hashanah? Is he judged every day? Is he judged every moment? We talked about the various. We touched on a few minutes ago about the various ways in which Mefoshim and then Kuntra Samaya and many other sources reconcile this. Anyway, the Gemara points out there that when we so Rava says k'man matzlinin of tziri v'almiri, which opinion do we follow when we daven on a personal level for people who are sick and for people who are unwell? K'man k'Rav Yosi, that would be like Rav Yosi, who says that odom nidin b'chol yoyim. So therefore, so according to him, it makes sense to daven for the person to recover because he's being judged today, so today your tefillah may help him, as opposed to according to the opinions over there that a person is judged only on Rosh Hashanah. Then what good would davening do now? Now, Tosfos over there discusses in Rosh Hashanah, and many other Mefoshim discuss, so wait a minute, I mean, the fact is, and we all say the brachas in Shemana Esrei, right, the Chilei Am Yisrael, and other such things, so one answer is there's a difference between Tfilas Yochid and Tfilas Tzibur. Tfilas Tzibur doesn't matter, as the Gemara says over there, even after the Gzeira, even after Gzar Din was completed on Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, etc., nevertheless, the Tfilah of Rabin can overturn it, so therefore it's appropriate that the Rabin daven and say, right, the Chilei Am Yisrael, for the same reason when we do Mishabeirach, we say the so it's also a tefillah for the rabbin. So that's different. Here we're talking about if a person is davening one-on-one for a sick person. What do we mean by davening for the ktsiri and the miri? So the Mefardesh explains that we're talking about two different brachas in Shemana Esrei. The ktsiri, the sick ones, is when we say, the bracha rafa'enu. The other one, miri'i, where we're saying, refers to the Menachat Chachamim, is in the bracha ala tzadikim, when we have the phrase, v'al pleitas beis sefreyem, they're asking the Eibishter to have rachmanos on the remnant of the ones who learn in their schools, in their bote medrash, in their chadorim. So the Mefarish explains that that's what we mean davening for the ktsiri and the miri'i. But Maoshar doesn't like that explanation because the fact is, in pleitas amcha beis Yisrael, pleitas beis sefreyem, we're not saying anything about them being sick. So therefore, he says we're not talking about two separate brachas. We do mean only the bracha roif echel am Yisrael. It does include both of them. But Rava is saying the fact is, like we said, they're focused so much on learning Torah and they don't always take care of their health and therefore they easily become sick. So therefore, the bracha rafa'inu we're saying is meant to include both of them, both the people who are actually sick as well as the Talmid Chacham who are prone to getting sick. So midr omer k'tziri and miri. So since he's mentioning two different groups, k'tziri and miri, shmamina, we can see from that k'tziri means k'tziri mamish. The word k'tziri means people who are actually sick, and they're called k'tziri meloshen kotzer because when a person is sick, he's impatient to get better. We often find in chumash and we find in Tanakh that sometimes the word kotzer ruach, like you have in Parshas Va'edom, kotzer ruach and other such expressions like that in Tanakh, that means a person is impatient for something to happen. So therefore, sick people are called k'tziri, and miri is meloshen like you have the word shriver. So it means people who are weak and not so well. There is a very interesting word in that connection you look at the structure of the bracha al tzadikim. Al tzadikim, al chsidim, al ziknei amcha beis Yisrael, and then we have al pleitas beis sefreyim. So if we're saying pleitas beis sefreyim refers to, like the Mefarish is saying, that we're davening for the health of the Talmid Chachamim, why are we mentioning it only over there? Why don't we start to begin with al pleitas tzadikim, al chsidim, etc.? So there's an interesting explanation that the tzaddikim and the chassidim, the ones who are mentioned at the beginning of the bracha, are already mature Talmid Chachamim. They're not so prone to getting sick. They put in their tremendous effort in learning when they were younger, and now, fakir, Torah gives a person chayus and koyach and all the other good things that it says in Pirkei Avos. The pleitas beis sefreyim are the younger talmidim who are still, they're getting into it. They're not used to the strenuous schedule of learning and hardiving yet. So therefore, they're more likely to get sick. sick, and therefore we ask on them, our plate has space for them, and the Eibishter should have rachmanos on them, so that they can grow up and become the tzaddikim and the chassidim and so forth. Okay. So the point is that Rava is saying, so the answer about the squashes is that the ones who eat them are not people who are actually sick, but rather the chachamim, whereas the Talmud chachamim, whereas actual sick people should not be eating squashes in the first place, and that explains the story with Rav Yehuda. Okay. Yom Yom Mashiach Ha'Gu'olah, Chavez Shvat. Seeing as how it's for Yortzeit to the Devitzin, so the excerpt, of course, is something about women. By T.S. Mitzrayim, we had famously, Rashi says, had Miriam and all the women over there have their tambourines with them because they were certain that the Eibush is going to do for them Nissim, so they brought out their tambourines from Mitzrayim. So it is also by the Geula from this last Golus that the Neshe Yisrael Tzidkonius have to be very, very certain, and certainly they are very certain, that the Geula Amitis Vashlema is coming immediately, take her from Yad Mamash, and even in these last moments of Golus, they're already ready with the sing, with the songs and the instruments and the dances about the coming of the Geula Amitis Vashlema. Yeah. Okay, speaking of women also, let's talk about, to finish off the halachas of, we were talking about the halachas of women who gave birth. So actually now, the last halacha in the siman, then, is about the dinim of taking care of the baby. We talked about the dinim of taking care of the woman herself, the mother herself, before the delivery and after it. So now, what about the baby himself? So you do the various things after the birth, the various things that are necessary for the baby, bathing him and cutting the umbilical cord and then straightening out his limbs because they tend to get dislocated during the birth. So all those things you do on Shabbos. The Alter Rebbe does point out a detail within that, based on relevant Gemaras, that this straightening out the limbs, you can do that on the day he was born, but after that, no. If something is out of place, then you can swaddle him, you wrap him up tightly in cloths to get things back in place, but you can't actually go and start manipulating them on Shabbos. Anyway, this is all if the baby is a ben kayama, if he's a healthy baby. But if he's not a ben kayama, as you have in Shas, for example, all over where a baby is born during the eighth month, and in Gemara terms that such a baby is not viable nowadays, they would put him in an incubator. But anyway, such a baby would actually be mukti. You wouldn't even be allowed to move him on. You wouldn't even be allowed to move him on Shabbos. The Alter Rebbe says actually moving him fine, you could, but not other things. As far as even for the mother to nurse him, she would have to bend over and nurse him only because the milk, because otherwise she gets engorged with milk and it's painful for her. But other than that, so nowadays that kind of thing is not really applicable because the baby is anyway brought to the NICU and they take care of him over there, and even babies who are born several months premature, often they're able to save them. As far as this din, by the way, as far as this matter of milk, you also have the din on Shabbos in that connection, that a nursing mother who has milk and she can't nurse her baby for whatever reason. So as far as expressing the milk, she can't express it in order to put it in a container to save for later. That would be, it's a tolda of the malacha of dash, but she can express it in order to get there, in order to relieve the pain, in order to relieve the engorgement, and have it go, and then have it go to waste, basically. So like she do it into the sink or something like that, so it's not actually, then it's not the actual malacha of dash, because it's not being done for a purpose, and it's just being done in order to relieve herself.
Wait. Put your hand down.